Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their travel trailer, which they have nicknamed Bessie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. Well, I've been kind of cranky lately, and I'm sure it's because of a bunch of different things. Because we're still running around to catch up from our trips, or because it's tax season, and that means another 4 months of constant stress at work. Because in California this year, the rain is much appreciated for the most part, but it's hit in spades, so I can't sleep through the night without worrying about emergency piping at 3 a.m. Because I've been living with a teenage girl for the last 4 years, and that can get old in the first 15 minutes. Because the cost of everything has gone up, and the budget is squeaking through. Most likely because Rick is back east visiting family, and I miss him greatly. Or maybe it's just because I'm in my mid-50s and everything makes me cranky these days. But in the normal course of things, when I want to get uncranky, or even when I don't, my hubby tells me to go and put my hands in the dirt. I don't know if that's just because it gets me out of his space for a few minutes, or just because I almost always feel better working out in the yard and I am then bearable, but it usually works. Now these days, though, that's not always available to me when I'm at my highest stress point. Try telling your boss you have to go home for a few minutes to go dig in the dirt and see what he says. It's a no-go. But my next best thing to take the sharp edges off of my nastiness is a walk. Walking is something that has been limited in my life lately, with that whole foot fragmentation fiasco last year. And it's kind of a bummer because that's when I really needed to get out and move. And it's especially when my family needed me to do it as well. Maybe that's why they seemed to disappear frequently on their own walks without me when I was stuck on my butt in the sofa last spring. I don't know why walking is such a balancing thing. Maybe it's because of the balancing part. Because when basic locomotion requires concentration, you tend to drop everything else in your brain. Or maybe it's because of the rhythm of it. I have an earworm, not literally of course, but that thing where a song goes through your head, when you do something repetitive especially? Well, for me, apparently that thing includes things like perambulation. For instance, when I go about the block on my lunch hour and I put one foot in front of the other, that one trumpet measure from Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue runs constantly in my head. Remember that 1951 movie, An American in Paris, with Gene Kelly and Leslie Caron dancing around the fountain? That first part. Now, a side note, if you follow the links to watch the part I'm talking about, make sure you don't bring the kids. Those two talented artists are fully clothed, but it is one of the sexier scenes ever filmed, in my opinion. It's a lost art in this age of graphic filmmaking, in my opinion. But the tune itself is seriously addictive in any case, so it illustrates the earworm concept. Lately, especially with this podcast episode on the schedule, I've been having a different tune cycling through my skull as I hit the block on foot, and I found myself making up verses at this point in Rick's absence. This new tune fixed in my brain is courtesy of Megan Hensley, the charismatic gal we know as the Donkey Farrier. That's not going to be today's interview, but it goes with the theme. We met up with Megan when she treated us all to a song or two at the Donkey Welfare Symposium in Davis a few years back. She and her band played this song once, and it's stuck. If you follow us, or you know of the amazing Patsy Cline, or you've seen our video on the Donkey Welfare Symposium, you can probably guess at the new tune in my head that fits today's theme. Patsy's Walkin' After Midnight is a classic, earworm or not. When Megan sang it, it was, I go out walking with my donkey. But for this week, another critter is the one I'm thinking about when my foot hits the ground. Before I get to that, I'll tell you that my de-stress song edit is appropriate this week. Because last October, when we were racing to prep for the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, life was more than a little bit hectic then, too. The schedule was demanding, and travel was challenging, and organizing the crew was tense, and the weather was grumpy, and on and on. This life we've chosen is always extremely fulfilling, but I gotta admit, it's pretty stressful at times. But last October, at the very last stop before the festival chaos began, my brain got to let down for a few minutes. We went walking at Cloverbrook Farm. Okay, now's the part where I get to tell you a little bit about Andrea Tibbetts. She's another one of those people that's hard to find in any place you saw her last, because she's yet another one of those inexhaustible people who quietly make sure that the wheels keep turning for the PTA, or the church potluck, or the 4-H club. Literally, the 4-H club in this case. It's called the Spitters Club, to be precise. Most 4-H groups are pigs, or goats, or cattle, and those are great, but these folks take a walk on the wilder side. We first met Andrea at Rhinebeck, where every year she runs the Camelid Barn. She makes the llama and the goat parade a hit, while minimizing actual collision-type hits, and executes logistics for the leaping llamas. Just a little note here, we saved today's release date for Leap Day on Leap Year because we knew we couldn't get a segue like that again for another few years. And you're welcome to the rest of you on that Myers-Briggs section of the personality scale. Anyway, Andrea does all of this logistical magic, and she does it while coordinating what seems like 25 teenagers. Can't be more than 15, I'm sure, but they seem to multiply like tribbles every time you walk in the breed barns. Sometimes it's hard to track down this lady, and I don't think she ever sits much while she's there, so it was about year two before we got a solid word in, and year three before we got to see her in her other element, referring to Cloverbrook Farm, which she also runs. Last fall, it's the place where I finally stopped, took a moment, let my brain stop racing, and took a walk. With a llama. Now, this definitely sounds like one of those things that people with too much money and not enough sense do. Goat yoga comes to mind. But after my llama walk, I'm willing to give the people in the goat yoga universe a little bit more latitude. A llama walk sounds ridiculous, but damn, it works. Now, I don't know that everyone who visits does a Cloverbrook llama walk to de-stress. Some of our fellow meanderers on the Camelid stroll were obviously up from the city for a quirky farm visit adventure. And that was valid, because it was one of the more educational agricultural moments we've experienced. Before the strolling part, Andrea gives an intro to everything on her farm, and that talk vies with the best of them for concise, interesting factoids on llamas, alpacas, and goats. And I'm sure that's saying something with that livestock pool. The farm store was a big hit too, complete with fuzzy mittens, stuffed animals, ornaments, and pretty much all things fiber. But for me, at this moment, this visit was even more essentially necessary than the farm visits we love so much. I go back to that thing I was talking about earlier, where you let your brain go a little bit when you walk, which I'm sure everyone does to some extent. But what everyone doesn't do is take the lead of some form of camelid and stroll through the green fields of upstate New York during their perambulation. And it actually works. It's the weirdest thing, but when you're out there walking next to a llama or an alpaca, it's kind of hard to focus on trouble. It's difficult to think about work, or stress, or relationships, or traffic, or practically anything, except the rhythm of your stride, or the smell of farm animals, or the lack of sound from the beast beside you as it walks next to you on the path through the grassy field and forest. No hooves, remember. The soft fur brushes up against your hip as you stride, and when you stop for a moment, there's often a slight, warm, inquisitive breath near your cheek, and those deep, limpid brown pools of camelid brown to dive into. As John Stewart might say, it is truly a moment of zen. In your more hectic times this week, be it tax season or midterms or a traffic jam, or whatever chaos you need to escape from for a few moments, I hope you join me in a mental moment of transport, strolling through green pastures with a song in your heart. For your tune, you can insert whatever lyrics fit best for you. Whatever they are, you can take comfort in the thought that you'll no doubt sing better than me. When we're in that moment, though, it really doesn't matter, because outside on a slow ramble, rain or shine, nobody minds a less than perfect voice as long as it's happy, especially my llama.
Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Oh, would love to. This is Biscotti the Llama, hashtag Biscotti the Kissing Llama. Look
yes,
it up. You'll see a
whole
wall of women doing this kind of smoochy thing. So he's our oldest guy. His official name is Biscotti Chips, hence all the spots on his legs, also known as an Appaloosa Llama. And he has been with us for about 5 years. He was another rescue, but he's 18 and a half. He's our very oldest llama, average lifespan 20.
Now you did the walk and talk earlier with us, so you allowed us very kindly to sit in on your llama walk. So you've done quite a bit with agritourism, and you got this down pat. I mean, this is kind of a professional show here. We've noticed.
Yes, it is.
And
it's fine-tuned.
And it's a really great thing because it's a super educational thing. Tell me a little bit about what you do here.
Sure. So, I mean, it really goes back to my background as administration in schools and, you know, with the overall arching umbrella, lifelong learner. And so that was really the thinking behind starting up the farm back in 2016. But the reality is a lot of that, whether it's classes, most of it was volunteer, is you've got to find ways to pay your bills.
Yeah.
You know, with rising costs here on the East Coast, maybe even the West Coast, hay bill. We've been here now into our 8th year. It's more than doubled in cost, so which is one of the reasons we started agritourism.
Yeah.
You know, we really had kind of a nice project set up, mostly educating people about what we do, the information about animals. As you saw, we do a lot of walk and talk is what I call it. And it allows us to both educate people who come to the farm when the reality is they're coming for the smoochy kissiness selfie. And then they take away hopefully appreciation for not only fiber animals, but a little bit about understanding of farming itself. And so they are, that is their main purpose, are pack animals. Actually goes back to Inca times. They have been, in fact, the llama in South America is still considered sacred because even though I mentioned that our largest one is close to 500, many of the llamas in South America well over 1,000 pounds. She's like, now you can see full body view. So generally majestic, very comfortable in who they are. Another reason why they're used for guard. She's going over to say hi to her mom maybe. So, all right, so let's keep walking over and let's see who else we can meet over on the other side, at least before we bring you back up for your hike.
Well, that's one thing that people might kind of say, oh, people are doing goat yoga and they're doing camping with the sheep. But the reality is that most farmers just, you can't make it on farming unless you have this monstrously large farm, right?
Right, right.
So you have to diversify your income stream or you're not going to make it.
That's the key word, diversification. That's something that I think has come about more in the 21st century in order for farms to stay afloat. You know, we have rising costs around us, whether it's hay, it's land taxes, it's, you know, vets, bills, all of that. And so you do have to diversify. You know, I came into this thinking I was going to be a fiber farmer. I would be able to sit on the back porch and knit away my days after retiring. But the reality is you really have to kind of keep a couple balls in the air in order to be able to support these animals and also, you know, just the general maintenance of a farm.
Yeah. And so I know with my grocery bill, it's literally $120 and I have two sacks of groceries leaving. Bags of groceries. And it's just horrendous. It's jumped dramatically. So do you feel comfortable saying if your hay bill has gone up, can you give people a frame of reference as to what we're talking about?
Sure.
For just the feed?
Yeah. So let's start with hay. That is about 85% of our food costs. And as I mentioned, we are now going into our 8th year here at this farm. And our hay has more than doubled in price. In fact, when we started farming here, our hay was $4.50 a bale. And now it's over $11 a bale.
Yes.
So that's why I say more than doubled. We go through about 2,000 bales a year. So do the math. And you can see how that is a large part of the farming budget.
Yeah. Yeah, now tell me how many of each type of animal you have.
So we have 28 llamas and alpacas. We have 36 Shetland sheep. We have 15 Pygora goats. Now that's all surrounding the fiber business that we're doing here. However, as I mentioned earlier, the farm, the name is all started from our daughter whose name is Brooke. Her first goat was Clover. So we have probably about 50 dairy goats.
I love when people say probably. You don't know, yeah, it's because if the husband watches this, then he's going to go, we have what?
I know. Hopefully he's not seeing this. I think he knows already, though.
But these guys, I mean, they have to be functional. And I noticed you were talking to the tour earlier. You were telling them the lifespan of fiber production for this animal. Tell me what that is. That you, this guy is 18, you said?
18 and a half, mm-hmm. actually. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, not all what you conceive to be fiber animals are fiber animals. A lot has to do with the fineness of the fiber. We were talking earlier about the micron count. Now, just by chance, he is not a fiber animal. So you think he would be because he's fluffy. He's actually originally a classic llama where they're not used for fiber. And without kind of like, you know, handling them all over, he has very coarse fiber. So that, to a certain extent, cannot be part of our fiber business in the sense of the focus is yarn. So now we talked earlier about fiber has a lot of uses. It's not just yarn. We use it for into making into roving, felted sheets, the boot inserts, and then the big one is felted dryer balls. And so that's kind of the, as they're fiber ages, or I should say as the animal ages, the fiber gets more coarse. We kind of see that in our own hair, right? Yeah. And so that means it makes us shift in terms of the usage of the fiber. Now, does that mean I bring in new younger animals to continue that fiber process? Possibly. But the reality is we're really, having switched over to be a rescue farm, have really kind of maxed out at our numbers at this point.
Yeah, because you have to feed all these animals for the non-productive time where they have to find another role. They have a responsibility. So this guy's obviously the social coordinator and the one that romances everybody that comes in the
door,
right?
That's right.
This is your kissing
llama.
That's right.
He is the romancer here.
Yes. And but not all of the animals are going to be that way, but we talked about other roles, like maybe the guardian llama. A lot of people assume all llamas are guardians, but that's not always the case, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting is, you know, with the llama industry, it's been changing, evolving, right? You know, mm-hmm. we see that as a recent New York Times article about how, you know, on the East Coast, llamas have really kind of exploded into popularity. You know, they've always been popular, but the purpose of them continues to grow, you know, and so yes, livestock guardian. I think that was the original mm-hmm. purpose back in South America where they came from, and most of the places, whether it's North America or other, you know, areas that are using them for farming. But as they start to see, as the years progress, they become more domesticated, a little bit more handleable, a little bit more usable. So hence the hikes that we do here. In addition to that, people use them as, you've seen, golf caddies. They use them as carrying golf clubs. We bring them to weddings, because people like to have that unique interest
yes.
for them. And, you know, of course, we're using for the llama alpaca hikes. But I think the most important focus is we do a lot of animal-assisted therapy here. Mm-hmm. And the fact that over the years they've evolved to be this very docile, comfortable animal with humans really helps with the approach of true and multi-purpose animal.
Yeah.
You know, how many other animals do you know out there that have all those effective and purposed usages?
Yes.
You know, and then of course, hence the llama alpaca hikes.
Yes. Now, in much of our animal production system, textiles and food production, we have gone to a single purpose with many things, but we kind of forget that it's not just the individual. It's not just a cow. It could be a Devon cow or a Longhorn cow. Those are two
right.
very different things.
Mm-hmm.
And even within those things, you might get a cranky cow that's it's going to do what it's going to do, but it's not going to be suitable for all things. So, you know, with your llamas and your alpacas, they're not all going to want to go to Rhinebeck and be held by
exactly.
every little person that walks by, right?
That is exactly it. Because a lot of times when people come for the hikes and they see this huge assortment of alpacas and llamas over there, they're like, I want that one. Well, the reality is it takes a lot of training and it takes a specific temperament for them to get to this or get to
yeah.
the hike.
Yeah.
And so it kind of, even though we have, oh gosh, we must have 20 llama and alpaca boys on this side, not all of them are used for the hikes. Basically only 10 of them are, where I feel that they have gone through a kind of a specialized training, we call it, to set up for an unpredictable environment. For
even in such a contained space, you are going to have unpredictable.
You can.
I
yeah.
want to walk the llama this way. And, you yeah. know, someone's dragging on the leash in the way that, you know, that was not the instructions.
You got
so,
it.
Yes,
you
I know. I'm
it.
Sorry. Did you like my... Yes, hello. He's just checking still. That's
yep.
the affirmation.
He's
a sweetie.
He's a sweetie. He's very curious.
But again, that thing that says that they're not all the same. Here in the pasture, you said he's fine, but he does not like to go to a New York State Sheep and Wool Festival with 30,000 people walking by.
That's right. So, you know, he's a. We always say as the llamas age, I can kind of reflect to that, because as I age, I start to kind of pick up on less of those. I don't want to leave the house as much or go off the farm, right?
Hey, you kids, get off of my lawn.
I know. And he is a perfect example as our oldest. He's like, you know, I've done my time. You youngins go. And in fact, when we go to llama alpaca shows, we always take our younger ones just because they transition through that kind of, which to you may see a nuance, but it's a big deal for them to leave the farm. Mm. And so obviously the younger, the healthier, they can kind of recover faster from that. As they get older, it's wear and tear in their system,
yeah.
You know? And so yeah. We always say that, especially our older ones, they've earned the time just to stay on the farm and hold down the fort. When we go to the Sheep and Wool Festival, when we go to the Big E for the llama show, when we go to the Dutchess County Fair, you know, and so he's here holding down the fort.
Yep,
he's got his job. He's earned it.
Well, I have to commend you. I don't know if this was a volitional decision or not, but you led the group in, and you start with, just because the pygoras are like, pet me, but that was the first animal that was approached, and it's this little thing like this, and they're kind of like, oh, I love you, I'm peaceful, I'm calm, and I'm soft, and I'm cuddly, and it kind of gets them adjusted to the next particular animal, which is a little bigger, right?
Whoa, much bigger,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, much bigger. Right. And so it kind of, it was nice how you sort of spaced that in there. So again, I don't know if that was on purpose, but it was brilliantly done. If so, because they those little pygoras, that's a new one for me, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
They draw people in. Everyone loves a goat. And when they're curly and friendly and, you know, just cute as a button, it draws them in. Yeah. So we actually call that, when I do this part of our experience, we call it a pasture walk, but it actually is kind of rephrased as Feel the Fleece Tour. Because I want people to see that a lot of fleeces are different from animal to animal.
Yep.
So we start with the pygoras, mohair, and you've got the very lustrous feel and softness to it. Then we move on to a llama, that it can be very soft too, different parts of the body. And then, you know, if they get their own alpaca for their tour, but then also there's a sheep out there. I don't know if we met Sunday along the way.
No.
Sunday is, I always tell people, he is a hair sheep. And what does that mean?
That's not a scaredy cat out here, was it?
No, oh, okay. No. He's in the back. He actually, originally his purpose was as being a meat sheep. And so I try to show people that there's very few dual purpose animals, like meat yep. and fiber. You can have it. It's a big, I think, genetics program that they have to focus on.
Yes.
And so with that in mind, I always like to show people that, you know, we all have those wool sweaters that we automatically think sheep or wool, you know, perfect for any type of usage, but that's not the case. There's very few sheep that can be for, we say, garments against your skin, and then it becomes outer garments
yeah.
and or actually this old barn we're just renovating now, when we tore down the sides, it was filled with sheep fleeces. Because they would use
it's such good insulation, isn't it?
And they would use it as insulation.
Thinking, man, you know, in this, we hit this on our what we call our tartan and tweed tour when we went to the UK last month, 2 months ago now. Over there, you know, you always think England is ubiquitous. I mean, it's the name England and sheep and wool are it, but they don't even worry about the wool for the most part anymore over there
right.
because they have no market for it. Does this sound familiar? The wool market is not appreciated as it should by the average consumer, and they don't want to pay that. I just want to pay what I can get for, you know. So they actually shear many of the sheep just as a humane, mm-hmm. just as an issue of being humane to the animal, because it costs more to shear it than it does than they can get for it.
Yeah.
And so it, you know, this is one of the things I do love about Rhinebeck, is you have people that usually will understand the value, the cost, and the value. Because if this animal's really, or the alpaca's going to be producing effectively 3 or 4 years, and that's kind of the soft years,
yeah.
and yet you have to absorb the rest of it.
Exactly.
Or if you have a goat that, you know, you have to individually comb that,
oh,
and the softer
cashmere's.
The fiber,
yeah.
the, you know, I'm sorry, but it's going to cost you $100 for that little lump mm-hmm. of wool. I mean, that kind of is a reality,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and that's the thing that we actually take into approach here, which is one of the most important reasons to train your animals so they have a multi-purpose use. And again, their purpose is basically grow the fiber, give a haircut, and that happens 3 times a year. So the haircut cycle on the farm, as a fiber farm, it's pretty... It's pretty notable that's kind of what takes up a lot of our time. Everyone gets a haircut in the spring, and that includes the llamas, the alpacas, the pygora goats, the sheep. And just to kind of put things in perspective, we have 28 llamas and alpacas, we have 36 Shetland sheep, we have 15 pygora goats. So it's pretty busy here on the farm this spring. And then going on with that haircut cycle, the pygora goats, they get another one in the summer because their fiber has grown pretty long. And the most important part of giving them these constant haircuts is because their fiber is very fine, it can mat really easily. And if I allow it to mat, that's kind of a loss of a fleece. And so we're really kind of adamant about making sure we're checking them at what point they need to be shorn. And then fall comes around, they get another haircut. And in fact, these pygora goats had a haircut about a month ago. And then our Shetland sheep, which we'll see along our walk, get another haircut. So amongst all those animals we're referencing, we produce about 300 pounds of fiber here at the farm annually. That gets basically sorted by fineness. First of all, by species, by fineness, by color. And then it gets shipped to a mill that's in Connecticut. And in fact, the mill that we use is one of the vendors at Rhinebeck Sheep and Wool Festival. And they do amazing things with my fiber. I always say to my kids whenever, you know, they're like, I want a new animal. So I say to them, what's your job? And they're like, what? I said, every animal has to have a job on the farm. Yep. And it's not just raising fiber. And so ironically, you know, our kids not only raise the goats, but they've trained them to do the goat walks. So all of this comes and supports the farm in terms of, you know, just general over, just kind of oversight, maintenance of the buildings, food, all of that.
Yeah, it's self-sufficiency, isn't it?
Self-sufficient. Everyone has to pull their weight, including not only just the farmer, all of the farm friends.
Yeah, and it helps the animal in the long run. It's got more uses. And so when one thing, you know, we can wait a little bit. It's not just that one thing, even if they can't do that anymore.
Right, exactly.
So now one of the things that we really love too is that on many farms, yours included, you have a farm shop. and this is probably some of the things that do you have a vendor stall at
I do not
at the festival? No. So you just go for the kindness of your soul to show llamas and alpacas and camelids and things like that to show the general public.
Right. So I mean, education is a huge component. You've seen this on our tour, you know, and to be able to continue that and actually help the camelids and cashmere barns support that going forward, I think in the long run is just as effective than selling goods for the industry.
I would
agree. Letting people understand the benefits to both handling, raising, or better yet, educating before they jump into it.
Yes.
You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, we have 28 llamas and alpacas, and about 20 of them are rescues because a lot of times people think after they get into it.
Yeah.
And so this is an opportunity for both the llama alpaca industry, for the health and humaneness of these animals, how they're handled, and then talking about the benefits of the fiber. So, you know, the reality is the farm store actually came about, a lot of people come here and they want to take a little memento, something from the farm, and, you know, that we do the corny little, I walked a llama, I walked an alpaca buttons and on. And so that's how it started the whole, you know, making things out of the fiber for them to kind of be connected again to the farm, not just from the animal they walked. Many times they come into the store and they say, you know, which animal was from this fiber? You know, I could give them, usually show them a loofah, lavender loofah, a hat, fingerless gloves, and it just keeps that cycle of support going.
Yeah. That's probably my very favorite thing about the festival, is that you see the animal and you can see the beginning, the middle, and you can connect those things. You can say, you know, I felt that Gotland. Boy, did that color just draw me. But was that the perfect thing for that one? I needed a sweater that was a little sturdier. But you know what? Then I went and talked to the lady down there that, hello, again.
Just checking in.
Just checking. But, you know, maybe you find another fiber that's a little bit sturdier, has a little bit longer staple length, and you say, now that's the one that I want for the sweater, but maybe I mixed them. And you can see the animal, you can feel it, touch it, have an appreciation for the sweater once you get it.
Yeah.
And it kind of brings it full circle a little bit more. It's not just consumerism. In and of itself, consumerism is great because that's what helps to keep people alive.
But we've really surpassed some of that in other aspects. Yeah. We are kind of a bit of a throwaway society, right?
Yes.
Going back to purchasing, making something and purchasing something that's meaningful.
Yes.
And you tend to kind of really not only savor that, but also I think it kind of reinvigorates memories and feelings and the smells, the sights, the sounds. And what better than a farm? And maybe even that kind of a musty smell that comes with wool.
I love it. I love the smell of a barn.
Yeah. So, in fact, people come in, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, this kind of is starting to churn some memories when I was a kid, and I would go visit, you know, cow farms or sheep, you know. So, you know, all of those sensory triggers, I think, are really important to consumerism.
Yeah, and when you have that in a product itself, it's living in a way.
The wool is living.
Yep. People think, okay, well, it stops once you cut it off the sheep, but it's not. It's, you know, and that's why that whole fiber shed idea of here's where it started. Where's my phone? I've got it. I'm sorry, Rick. I'm going to interrupt
he's making the rounds. There he goes.
Smooching everybody again. You didn't see the behind the camera part.
He loves beards, by the way.
But it's a really nice thing because it brings you back to the real things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a textural thing. You feel it and touch it, and it brings you back to a place like this. And you say, I can imagine that now.
Yep.
And I can feel like I'm on the farm. Or I can remember my grandmother's hug because she knitted me the sweater.
The scratchy sweater, the smell of the fiber. Yeah. I mean, whether it's, you know, you've heard the whole term of slow fashion. I like to kind of use that cliche and say, like, slow farming. You know, as you saw, people come to the farm and, you know, most of the people from the city, and they're running here late because they had to go to work and pick something up or whatever. And then by the end, they're just this relaxation, their shoulders are more relaxed, and they've kind of like settled into the walk and their animal. Yeah. And it just like plays a huge role in many ways, whether it's therapeutic or not. We need more of that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the fact that you're there every year. And I'll just mention that whether or not everybody knows it, you sort of are the mover and shaker in the camelid barn. And it's good because sometimes animals get forgotten. You know, everybody thinks wool and thinks sheep, right? But it's not just that. And some people think, you know, cashmere, and they think sheep. You know, no, that's a goat.
Right.
But it's great to see these other animals in there that are a little outside of the norm or our norm, mm-hmm. what we conceive to be the definition of something, and to have something like this that is just so foreign and both so interesting at the same time that you know, this guy just came up and smooched me. I'm going to really think differently about llamas after that, right?
Yeah.
And it's a great thing.
It is. And it's a great segue into the Dutchess County Wool Growers Association, which started the Sheep and Wool Festival, in the 80s. Our daughter, Kate, who's been raising llamas, as you saw, and she's 17, is the wool ambassador. And I think it shows you she's going into her third year, probably her last year because she'll go to college next year. But it shows you the embracing wool in general. Just the fact that the Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association is recognizing that fiber in itself has a lot of usages and purposes, whether it's sheep, llamas, alpacas, yaks. You know,
they want to get a yak in there. I told Jerry, she said, I'd love to get a yak.
Cashmere
goats. I might be
able
to help you with that.
Pygora. So it's kind of a great reflection of the fiber industry in whole in terms of embracing everything.
I agree. And they are so open to the educational component to it. Mm-hmm. They really, really are adamant because, you know, we were talking to them about doing the live streaming, asking them their preferences. And they said, we are about education. Yeah. That is our main focus. So, you know, this volunteer organization, it's a volunteer run every year. Not everybody understands. I think they want to say 80 volunteers or something, just like crazy like that. Yeah.
Yep.
And you got literally 30,000 people coming in there. It's a big deal.
It's a lot of juggling.
Yeah, it is. And they have the vendor barns. So every year, this is one of my favorite things about it, is this ability for every person to come back and connect that thing that they wear with something that's closer to the earth.
Yep.
And that's just a beautiful thing. So everybody that goes out and says, why is that sweater $500? It's not just the sweater and the time and the $2 an hour that person made to get that sweater. But this is you are getting a connection that you will not get when you go. I mean, no offense to Old Navy, but you're not going to get that when you buy your sweater at Old Navy.
Oh, yeah. That is
it's just not going to happen.
Spot on. Yeah.
So you are in a way, you are attempting to buy meaning. Does
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
And I every year I love that about this. You can see the sheep, see the sweater, and say, I'm taking a little piece of that home.
I do see a changeover since we bring over 4,000 people to the farm itself, and a lot of them are millennials.
Yep.
You know, and I'm starting to see that changeover, appreciation of that, recognize the importance of that. I find them to be a little bit less materialistic and more experiential.
Yeah.
You know, they want to experience. That's what their interests are about now. And so, you know, with that, I just, you know, we, not only the llama alpaca hikes, because you've got that sensory orientation, but the classes that we offer here too, they're along that same premise. And so everything that we'll source to run the class, everything in the class will be sourced directly from the farm. Mm-hmm. So keep that kind of encouragement of learning, asking, looking, you know, finding connections as a consumer as you go, which I think is it's the best thing we can do at this point, right?
Yeah, it is. And the thing that all of those people do not realize, I think, probably, is that their consumer dollars are helping to keep small farms alive.
Mm-hmm. Their llama or alpaca talking to people, answering questions, telling them, you know, to pet them on their neck, the softness of the fiber. And then, of course, the infamous leaping llama demo obstacle course.
We'll cover that.
We do that on Sunday. And I always joke around, you know, I say to my kids, don't let my animals, because at one time we had more than one farm coming representing the llamas. Now it's just down to one. And I'm like, do not teach them how to jump over the 5-foot limbo bar, because what we would then see is they would come back here and they'd be jumping around like, you know, a professional hurdler. And so anyways, but I've got some great kids who have been with me since they were little ones, and they will be there comfortable talking to people about their animals and sharing everything they think that is really special to them with the festival goers. So it's a really special time, and of course the best festival because of the, you know, atmosphere. It's in the fall. And
it's in the fall. It's one of my favorite events
Same
all year
thing
long.
Here.
Yeah. So if people want to find you here on the farm, what is your contact information?
So Cloverbrook Farm.
With an E.
In fact, it is the Cloverbrook Farm in Hyde Park. So we say find us on the website, www.cloverbrookfarm.com. We are the Cloverbrook Farm in Hyde Park. As you saw, not one in Pawling, spelled differently, two different farms.
Yeah.
We are can be found on, of course, social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Yes, I do post when I can. In fact, most of our followers now follow us and find us on TikTok. And so, you know, and then, of course, the old-fashioned way, email. So we are here, and visiting the farm is by appointments, of course, just mostly so we can be here and ready to take you on your special, unique experience.
Very definitely. Now, if they wanted to find out more about the Spitters Club or 4-H in general, where would you recommend that they go?
So they could either go to Cornell Cooperative Extension website, or they can just email me directly,
okay.
And I can give them information about specifically the Spitters Club. So eventually you'll be popping back and forth from either one. So okay. Whether it's Cornell Cooperative Extension or us, but we would love to share the farm with especially youth so they can enjoy agriculture at its best.
And get kissed by a llama.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please ask your friends to join us. Please also feel free to post any comments or questions to our social media sites. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under Backyard Green Films. Thanks again for listening.
We'd like to thank Andrea for joining us today and for allowing us to visit her beautiful farm. If you'd like to find out more information, please visit cloverbrookfarm.com. We'll have the link in the bio as well. We'll see you next time with another adventure. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for more upcoming episodes of our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, all rights reserved, copyright 2024.